Welcome to the Ignited Recovery Podcast, a new way forward for anyone looking for answers but feeling left out. If you've been searching for empowerment, triumph, and purpose, you've found them right here. You won't hear the same solutions, and you're not going to have any excuses to fall back on, because Ignited Recovery allows heroes to rise and become their best selves. I'm Dr. Adi Jaffe, and I can't wait to be your guide on this journey. Are you ready to become an Ignited Hero? Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of the Ignited Recovery Secrets Podcast. I'm Adi Jaffe. So glad to be here with you today. What I love about today's episode is this. I deal so much with the aftermath of what happens when people don't have the most appropriate attachment style, or they struggle with trauma, or they just don't get given the tools early on in life to live a wholesome, intimately open, radically transparent, functional life. And so they find ways to cope with that. And that means drugs, alcohol, porn, food, all that stuff that we know. And then we deal with it, which is, I love it. It's what I love doing, et cetera. But how nice would it be if we could deal with it on the front end? And so Emily here today is here to talk about how we can get kids to pay attention to some of these components of well-being that maybe they haven't before. And Ziva Kids is all about that. It's all about introducing kids through media, something they're already loving and attracted to the concept of mindfulness and meditation. And that is such a hard thing for me to teach adults. How beautiful would it be if we can get kids to jump on board? And so Emily, being an actual actress, like a theater actress, what she gets to do here is take those skills. She implemented them. You're going to hear how cool the way they approach this is. But what they're doing is serving kids content in a TV show-like way that they already want to absorb, just teaching them incredible skills. You know that Sophie and I are all about creating the most healthy environment, the most supportive environment for our kids and for our relationship. And I think if more and more kids get to learn how to meditate, how to be mindful, how to be able to understand, pay attention to, and talk about their own feelings, the world as a whole will be a better place. So check this out. If you want, we're going to have links for you below to be able to actually integrate this into your own parenting. Let's change the world. Let's make it easier for kids to know how to do this. All right. Emily Fletcher, the name is obviously pretty easy to pronounce. I can't, if I butcher that name, then I've got a problem. For 10 years or so, you've been coaching meditation or mindfulness?
12, actually. Well, wait, it's yeah, 10. I've been teaching for 10.
Love it. All right. Yeah, so I'll just bring us in and we'll go from there. All right, everybody. Welcome back to the interview portion of today's episode. We've got Emily Fletcher from Ziva Meditation. And we were talking right before we started here. I'm a huge believer in mindfulness and meditation, primarily because of how badly I needed it growing up. Nobody talked about it. I was that quintessential ADHD, ADD, running around, couldn't pay attention to anything for more than a handful of minutes. Nobody knew what to do with me. I mean, they still really don't know what to do with me. But now at least I have meditation and mindfulness as a tool. You've been teaching this for about 10 years, Emily. Tell everybody, how did you get into meditation and mindfulness, and where are we right before what you're about to launch when this comes out?
Ooh, so yeah, I used to be on Broadway. I was on Broadway for 10 years, and my job was to understudy three of the lead roles. My last show was A Chorus Line. And so basically that means you have no idea which character you're going to play when you show up at the theater, which is pretty anxiety inducing. So that led to a bunch of anxiety, which led to insomnia, which led to me going gray at 26. So here I am on Broadway, living my dream and miserable, not sleeping at night, sucking at my job, getting sick. And so long story short, I found meditation and it cured my insomnia on the first day. I stopped going gray. I didn't get sick for 8.5 years. And I just thought, why does everybody not do this? So I left Broadway. I went to India, started a 3-year training process to teach. And then since graduating, I've taught over 40,000 people to meditate. I created the world's first online meditation training. My book has been translated into 14 languages. And so it's like, okay, the world is ready. You know, we're waking up to the fact that we can't just caffeinate ourselves all day and drink ourselves to sleep at night. And certainly now in this pandemic, like even when the pandemic is over, we're still going to have to be dealing with the long tail emotional and psychological ramifications of a year of solitude. You know, they know that loneliness is worse for us than smoking physiologically. And so the reality right now is that if we're not managing our stress, it's managing us. And that's certainly true for adults, but it's definitely true for kids. And so I'm really excited because we are about to launch, and I'm not sure when this will air, we might have just launched Ziva Kids. So this is, I've been working on this for 2 years with folks from Harvard and Sesame Street. We've done 3 beta tests, and I can confidently say that we have created the world's most entertaining meditation training to help kids thrive. Like this is, I have a puppet co-star, his name's Z Bunny, and he's really funny.
Oh, that's amazing. What I love about it is how you're taking what you knew how to do and where your core skills were and moving it into this completely different field. And I want to touch on something because you said something that I think a lot of people might have glossed over, but you talked about how loneliness is worse for us with smoking and how stress, I believe stress is actually at the core of almost everything else we struggle with. Loneliness alone causes the isolation, lack of oxytocin, et cetera, which causes inflammation and stress by itself. But you talked about being on Broadway, and a lot of us, it's almost like we had it backwards for so many decades where the understanding, the assumption was go harder, do more, get more done, and that is how you will reach happiness. And in the short term, it might have looked that way because you got the nicer car and you had the really, really nice suit and you got the girls or the guys. And maybe you could buy the better alcohol and go to nicer restaurants. And so it looked like short-term well-being. Mm-hmm. And then you died earlier. You got more cancers, your hypertension. But we're so bad at making that connection, right? Like we're not, as animals, we're not made to look at, well, when I was a stockbroker, when I was on Broadway in my 20s and I was not sleeping and taking caffeine or maybe other, you know, harder things to keep myself awake, to be able to do all the hard work and sleep 3 hours a day, if that, I was causing damage that would play out 15, 20, 30, 40 years later in my life. We don't make those connections. Mm-mm. And yet millions of people, I'm not even talking about just about the mental health and addiction struggles. I'm talking hypertension, diabetes, cancers, strokes. So many millions of people have been affected by that, where there's, when you look at mindfulness as a practice, and a way of being, it's actually really simple. It's so simple. And yet it's taken us so long to figure out that it's something we need.
Mm. Well, you're absolutely right about the stress. According to Harvard Medical School, stress is responsible for 90% of all doctor's visits, 90. So, I mean, obviously that was pre-pandemic. And I think a lot of people are like staying home and not going to the doctor for regular stuff because the hospitals are filled for other reasons. But you know, when people think of meditation, they think, oh, that's like a cute, like bubble bath for my brain, or that's like a pedicure and I'll get around to that when I have more time. But right now I'm so busy hustling, you know, making more cash so I can get piles of money so I can die earlier from my hypertension and addiction and diabetes. But the thing is, once we reverse that, we realize that actually the opposite is true. So what you mentioned is what I call the I'll be happy when syndrome, which is the mistaken belief that we can somehow acquire our way to happiness. I'll be happy when I get the job, the girl, the money, the car, the million followers on Instagram, you know, when I'm a guest on Tim Ferriss's podcast, when I'm on Oprah, when I'm, you know, whatever your dream is. And the reality is that that day never comes. And I had the really beautiful gift of getting my lifelong dream when I was 22. All I wanted to do was be on Broadway. And once I achieved that dream, it was the saddest I had ever been, because it felt like my dream had been taken away from me. And I realized I was more interested in the happiness of pursuit than I was the pursuit of happiness. And the beautiful thing about meditation is that once you develop a daily practice, you start flooding your brain and body with dopamine and serotonin, which are bliss chemicals. So you start to train your body to see that you can access your fulfillment in a sustainable and self-sufficient way. And when you do that, you move out of the I'll be happy when syndrome, and you realize, wait, this stuff out here cannot make me, because I've already made myself. And if it can't make me, then it also cannot break me. And that level of detachment affords you a level of resilience and freedom and confidence that does not come with anything other than meditation.
Yeah. You know, I didn't know this a decade ago or so, because I hadn't been exposed. But in the last decade, I've worked now with literally members of, I don't want to say the number so it doesn't identify the people, but like, let's say if you take the 20th wealthiest family and the 20 wealthiest family in the world, I've worked with many of them. I'll just say it that way. And once you understand that when people have jets and any car they want and can do literally anything they want, like getting laws passed, it's an insane world they live in, and yet they can be miserable. This thing hit, like it finally resonated, and I went, oh, this doesn't mean money's not something you could enjoy, but it certainly means money is not sufficient and is not the ingredient for happiness. And I go, well, if I want my life to get better, then I have to stop focusing on that piece and I need to focus on something else. And what I realized, and I still, it's a daily pursuit for me, to be perfectly honest. And I think it needs to be for the vast majority of people who do it. Yesterday was a really stressful day. I literally went for a walk around the block, and I do walking meditation. So sometimes I'm literally just counting my steps. That's it. That's my mindfulness practice sometimes. That's as simple as it gets. But I was also in that idea that the pursuit was where, you know, if I could reach it, if I could get to, right, then I will be happy. And yeah. It took a lot of retraining. Now we're talking about adults, and all of us have had decades of maybe learning that needs to be adjusted, I'll say, because other people have told us the same, right? Other people said to us, well, if you lose those 15 pounds, or if you finally get a nicer car, then you'll get the girl. Or if you live in that kind of house, we've been told that and supported that from the other side. Let's flip it for a second and talk about what happens with kids, because there could be a better even intervention opportunity with children, because it's almost like their minds haven't been sullied enough. And they get this opportunity to understand the value of being in the present when they're still so young. And that's something they can benefit from you know, a century.
Yeah, the rest of their life. You're 100% right. So I definitely operate under the belief that our children are born perfect, that they are born, you know, connected, authentic, you know, in their beautiful sense of awe and presence and wonder. And it's honestly oftentimes our stress as parents, and also these systems that we've built, you know, school and getting into the right college and grades. And it's a very, you know, achievement oriented infrastructure that kids now have to adapt and find their way in. And so what I love about Ziva Kids is that it's going to give these children the opportunity to stay their authentic selves, to stay connected to who they are versus separating from it and then spending a decade in therapy having to undo that trauma. Because look, meditation is not going to stop you from having life. You know, life's going to happen. People will die. You will get in car accidents. You will have your heart broken. That's part of being a human. But if you are equipped at a very early age with emotional resilience tools, then two things happen. One, when the adversity comes, the impact of it is not as traumatic. And two, you're able to metabolize it in real time, right? You're not going through life with a shield around your heart because of the devastating pain of the last time you got hurt. So yes, that hurt, but then I recovered. Okay, so I can be a little bit braver going into this next situation because I might fail. I might get my heart broken, but I'm going to be okay. So you keep learning. I fall down, I get up. I fall down, I get up. And I would say if I had a magic wand, like my dream case impact of Ziva Kids is that a whole generation of children are equipped to feel the entire range of their emotions. And that's sort of baked into the training. I'll show you here. We have these puppets. So we have this puppet named Z Bunny, who's my co-star. We also have these, the guys are the Stormies. If you're listening to this, I have these like animated clouds. This is the sad Stormy. This is very on purpose, the reason why we represented emotions as clouds, because there's a beautiful Maya Angelou quote that says, every storm runs out of rain. And there's an Eckhart Tolle concept that says, even on a cloudy day, the sun is always shining. Similarly, even when you're feeling intense emotions, that bliss is always inside of you. And so we wanted to introduce this in a way that kids could understand, where it's like, oh yeah, I'm having some sad, stormy emotions and the sun is always shining inside of me. And that they're really going inside for their own superpowers.
I mean, there's so much I love about this. First of all, you know, I deal a lot with people who struggle with addictions and mental health struggles. And oftentimes it's in trying to cover up those negative emotions and find a way to not experience them that people turn to drugs and alcohol, right? And so depression is typically when you are saddened about things that happened in the past and you're kind of stuck in that past. Anxiety is typically when you're unsure about where you're going in the future and you're, you know, future tripping and trying to think about that. And so it doesn't, you, first of all, you can have both at the same time. Secondly, people think they're like opposites. They're not opposites. You can totally be depressed and anxious all at the same time.
I've had it. You can have anxiety and depression. Dream big, everybody.
A cornucopia of emotions. And so, like, I would be anxious around girls when I was in high school and junior high. So I would drink to not be as anxious. And so often we find that we try to fix these emotions by getting rid of them, which what I find, and we have this phrase because we're talking about kids, I'll use the F shame. I'll use a clean version of it. I say F shame a lot. And the idea is we start thinking these emotions are bad parts of ourselves. Yeah. And if I can say that as an adult, I guarantee kids who have an even harder time contextualizing and understanding how this all fits into the universe have had people tell them, oh, you can't do this and you can't, don't feel that feeling. That feeling is okay, but this feeling is not. And so you literally start like hiding parts of yourself and removing, trying to remove them at least. And then that becomes your shadow, right? This part of yourself that you can't talk to anybody about. You try to hide as much as you can. And if you really are terrified or really heavily affected by it, maybe even try to get rid of, which is when we get depersonalization and you really just kind of try to become these different people so you don't have to have this experience. And what you're talking about is not only teaching somebody that when you are sad, there's still happiness. Like happiness hasn't stopped existing because you're sad. You're just experiencing a different feeling right now. Mm-hmm. But maybe, and this is what I find out of meditation and mindfulness a lot, is that there's actually value in experiencing the feeling, right? That's like your body and your brain trying to send you a message. You are sad right now. Don't get rid of it. It's trying to tell you something. You're not happy with where things are. You're upset with where things might be going. Maybe a relationship you have, a friendship is not working out the way you want it to. And so it's giving you a feeling. These are all really important lessons. And when we try to quiet them, not only do we ignore part of ourselves, but we don't get the lesson.
Yes, that's so beautifully said. And the thing is that most of us, I certainly was, and most people in my generation were, we've been trained since infancy to not feel, shh, don't cry, have a bottle. Shh, don't cry, have a toy. You're fine. You're fine. Have some snacks. Have an iPad. Have some Facebook. Have some social media. Have some Zoloft. Have some Xanax. Have some booze. Have some pot. Have some porn. Have some, you know, and now we have an opioid addicted society where 40% of American women are on either antidepressants or anti-anxiety. And it's because the feelings keep getting bigger and bigger and the numbing tools stop being effective. And as I'm sure you know, addiction has like a 98% correlation rate with something called ACEs, which is adverse childhood experiences, which is a phrase that was coined by actually the Surgeon General of California. And that was pretty mind blowing to me. And I was like, wait, don't quote me on the exact number, but it's in the high 90s of people who have any sort of addiction had some sort of an adverse child. They have a high ACE score.
In the old one, there were 11 ACEs that you could potentially have. And if you had four or more of them, I think the likelihood was in the 70s. And if you had six or more of them, it was in the 90s. And so, which is the crazy thing about it is when you look at that assessment, there's so many ACEs that are actually missing out of it. We have an updated one that we created at Ignited for our users where there's like 20 some of them because they're like racial being stereotyped and being marginalized because of racial identity wasn't even in there. So there were a lot of things that were not even identified, but anyway.
And now we got, global pandemics. Okay, check. So we've all got one.
All of us
already got an automatic one. So now you're not white. Okay, check. You automatically have two. Oh, so your parents aren't enlightened monks. Okay, let's go ahead and put three on there.
And you mentioned women, and I just want to talk about this because it's so relevant in the context, even if what we're talking about for girls growing up, there's a statistic floating around out there somewhere that about 1 out of 4, 1 out of 5 women have been raped or sexually assaulted. And I think first of all, that's scary enough by itself. Secondly, when you expand your definition of what rape and sexual assault is, which I think if men were not the ones making the definition, it would be much, much expanded, right? Like, I think you get to the 50, 60, 70% of women who've been not approached, but literally in some physical way, sexually addressed or touched that they did not appreciate, they didn't ask for, and they didn't like. I mean, it's, in my opinion, it's actually pretty close to 100, but let's just start with a safe number, like in the 70s or so. And what you're talking about, giving people tools to manage their emotions and manage their, even an understanding of their feelings, I think can speak to all of these different elements of the human experience. Because part of the reason ACEs are so terrible is because if you're not allowed to experience the negative impact of them and then process it in a meaningful way, it is, I use the Green Mile as an example of this sometimes. Remember the Green Mile movie?
Vaguely. I remember that it existed, but I can't remember the plot. I remember like,
there was this guy who was on death row and they thought he had killed these girls, but what actually turned out happens is he eats other people's sadness and sorrow. And eventually it kills him because he eats so many other people's negativity, and he knows he's taking it on himself and it kills him. And it was such a metaphor for me for what so many of us do to ourselves. We imprison parts of ourselves, and then we try to make that part of ourselves eat all the bad stuff so that we never have to talk about it. And eventually we literally die from this. Like, it literally eventually kills us because stress is inflammation in the body, you know, lack of support and isolation, avoidance of oxytocin, all those things. It literally ends up killing you. And so by interfering or intervening at a young age, hopefully we make it okay for somebody to turn and say, hey, what you're doing right now is not fine. I don't like the feeling I'm having in this moment. And to give people that vocabulary is massive.
Yeah. And thank you for saying all that. I love that analogy. And inside of Ziva Kids, it was really important to me that the kids have the support that they need. So the kids are training to be superheroes in this course, and they're learning like, oh, my superpowers are inside of me. But there's also an adult training inside of this, and it's for parents not to learn how to meditate. That's their job. That's a separate course, but it's for them to be really good sidekicks for their kids. Cool. And so it's teaching them like not to dictate, like, you're fine. Like, you're don't cry. And letting them know that actually it's a very common and to be celebrated impact of meditation is that the kids can have a bit of a catharsis, a bit of an emotional release, and that it's our job as adults to create the level of emotional resilience that is necessary to quite literally hold space for the intensity of our kids' emotions. And that takes resilience. It's awful to see your kid in pain, of course. And if we squash it, we know that it's not just changing them emotionally, it's actually changing them on a cellular level. They have to be given the space to express their emotions. And like you said, all of our emotions are teaching us something. Like, you wouldn't think like, oh, the black keys on the piano are bad. The minor chords are bad. They're just different chords. They're different colors.
So true. So true. So walk me through, I gotta understand this to some extent. So you're on Broadway, you're acting, you're kind of having success there, and obviously it's not fulfilling, or it's not delivering the joy and the happiness and the contentment, the fulfillment you wanted. So then you found meditation and mindfulness for yourself. I want to hear the story of how it turned into working with children.
So interestingly and thankfully, I loved performing until the last thing I did. The last time I ever performed, I was sandwiched in between Liza Minnelli and Aretha Franklin, and then Barbara Streisand like closed it out. I mean, it was literally like mic drop, good night. I'll never top this as a performer. Like, I'm good, but I'm not that good. And so I really thankfully moved towards meditation and not away from acting, even with the anxiety, even with the going gray and getting sick. I felt like there was something wrong with me, but I still love the performing. And then when I found meditation, it was like, oh, it makes everything better. And then I started teaching. I thought it'd be a cute side gig, but then I started teaching hundreds turns into thousands, turns into tens of thousands. And my agents were like, hi, can you bring us a resume? And I was like, I'm busy. And so I moved toward that. And then almost right out of the gate, parents started asking like, hey, can you share with me how to teach my kid? My kid wants to learn this. This has been so great for me. I want to meditate with my kid. And this happened for 10 years. It was our number one most requested course was a kid's training. And I was like, no, not me, not my bag. I'm not your person. And then becoming a mom really changed me. You know, my son is 2.5 now. And I finally, I mean, it's as cliche as it is. You're like, oh, I get it. That now your heart is outside of your body. I get it. That like his pain is my pain. And so I was like, all right, I don't have to be the world's greatest kids educator. I can get the best. So I called one of my students. He was a puppeteer at Sesame Street. We started dreaming this up. He brought on a writer from Sesame Street, a puppet builder from Sesame Street. I got connected to a mindful educator at Harvard who specializes in Eastern philosophies. I got Dr. Shefali, who's been on Oprah 8 times, who is her parenting expert, who wrote The Conscious Parent. And so anyway, I just got literally the world's best folks. And we started 2 years ago and have been testing it and refining it and just trying to make it really funny so that the parents don't have to be, one, the meditation police, and two, the meditation salespeople, right? Like, parents have enough on their plate right now. They don't need to have like another thing to do. I wanted to make it so, so attractive for the kids. So I'm like, look, when you're making dinner with your kid, put on Z Bunny in the background. Let your kid come to it. You know, you're doing coloring with your kid. Great. Put on Ziva Kids. Let them come to it. Or better yet, you meditate and invite them to join you, right? Because we can't dictate this stuff. We can't force people to meditate.
No. Oh, I love it. First of all, when this is done, it's releasing Tuesday, which is literally just like 4 or 5 days from when we're talking right now.
Yeah.
And I can't wait to see it myself because we've got 3 kids. I got a 10, an 8, and a 2.5-year-old.
Oh my gosh, perfect.
Yeah. And so I can't wait.
And bravo. And I'll send you the beta right now. Like I can.
Please do. I'll send it to you right now. Please do. And by the way, I mean, for one, let's just be very, we're actually very strict about screen time in our house. We've talked about many, many times on here. If the kids are having great days and they've been good in every other way, they get about 30 minutes on a regular weekday and an hour on the weekend. But it's a pretty regular thing in our house. We say, look, you guys are acting up. You're forgetting how to play together. There's no screens right now. There's just no screens. And we just completely eliminate them. So like yesterday, as a treat, I love this. Sophie was gone. She was at an event. And I was with the kids and they asked, they were like begging. They haven't had screens in 4 or 5 days. And I said, well, if you want, I can pick something and we can look at something. So we started out literally with a World War II. Like they looked and they said, oh, can we see that? But it was a little too much for them. And then we went to Jeopardy and we watched Jeopardy for like 25 minutes.
Yes, I love that.
But I'm always looking for things that bring value because I have no problem with screens per se. But what we know is the way most TV shows, most entertainment gets created now is just to draw attention so that you later look at the ads. Like it's a very direct, it's like Facebook is trying to get you to buy ads. So they ping you because your friend you haven't talked to in 15 years walked by an ice cream store you used to hang out at. Like, who cares? Why does this involve my life? It's the same with kids. They're like, they just want you so focused on the screen that you can't look away so they can put the ad so they can make the money. I'm not interested in that. So having something positive for them to look at is incredible.
Yeah. And this is baked into my whole business model. Like I want so much for people to be self-sufficient. This goes for the adults and for the kids. I don't have an app. I don't have any plans on making an app. And to me, like having a free app where someone's guiding you through meditation is kind of like the equivalent of having an AA meeting in a liquor store. It's like, why would you go into the belly of the beast in order to meditate? Like this is the king of distraction. Yeah. And so we don't want to do that to our children either. And I know that right now, you know, as a necessity, we're having to use screens for schools. So while I am using technology to get these tools into the hands of kids, once they graduate from this 7-day course, they have the mindfulness, the meditation, and the manifesting to take with them for life. It's not like an app where they have to keep being plugged in or they Wi-Fi or headphones. It's just a really entertaining 7 days, like a Netflix show. And I hope that yes, they love it and want to revisit it from time to time, but it's not like every day they're looking at a phone in order to unplug. And that was really important to me in creating it.
Got it. So I think what we'll actually do is, if you want to send me the beta, because I think this will probably come out in a couple of weeks. So this will probably be out, but then I can even leave a review in the intro to the show about our own experience with the 3 kids and how they liked it, which would be a beautiful, beautiful handoff.
And they're 8, 10, and 4 and 2.5.
And 2.5. Yeah.
Okay, so I would say depending on your 8-year-old. So inside of Ziva Kids, it's actually two courses. There's one for 4 to 8-year-olds and then one for 9 to 14-year-olds. So depending on your 8-year-old, you could choose. Like if they're really into puppets and imagination and creativity, then you might want to put them in the play course. But if they're really grown up, like me at 8, I was already 30. So like, meaning I was just super grown up. I liked science and I was really interested in what the cool kids were doing. So if I would put myself as an 8-year-old in the grow course in the 9 to 14-year-old, but you can decide for your kid, or you can let, see, like,
I can see what they resonate with. You know, like one thing I learned that my parents, God bless them, they just were not of this mind. I'll just see what they're drawn to and I'll let them do that.
Perfect. And I would say even for your 2.5-year-old, so my son's 2.5 and he loves it and he doesn't get screen time either. And granted, it's his mom and it's the only screen he gets. So he just thinks it's like candy. He thinks it's hilarious.
Oh my God, I thought it
would go over his head, but he's actually engaged. He'll watch a whole episode. So
it's insane how capable 2.5-year-olds are. Like, and the reason I'm saying it's insane is when we were that age, you start understanding how much you actually absorbed from the world around you. Mm-hmm. And if nobody's really paying attention, they're not noticing that you are hearing everything and you're learning to copy everything.
Yes.
I mean, we have to tell our 8-year-old to not act or say certain words around his little baby sister because she'll then copy him, having no idea what she's really copying, but just incorporating into her own world. So having them share a positive experience together, because that's what you want. You want positive language that gets reiterated and reinforced in the real world for them and then gets repeated over and over.
Yeah, because if you think about it, if you're not, like, just like we said earlier, if you're not managing your stress, your stress is managing you. Similarly, if you're not managing the content that's going into your kids' eyeballs and brains, well, guess what? You're competing with advertising, porn, video games, music lyrics, everything else that's happening in their school from whatever else is happening in those kids' homes. And so we want to really take care and responsibility that we're nourishing our children. Just like we want to give them nourishing foods, we want to give them nourishing content for their minds. Because there's a whole world out there saying, don't feel your feelings. You know, don't take time for yourself. Just achieve and go and repress your emotions. And so it's up to us to really make sure that these kids have the time and space and feel safe enough to feel.
100%. I am so excited. I cannot wait to review this with the kids. And for all I know, at the end of this, we'll have the people, by the time they heard this, will have heard the kids themselves summarizing what this was like, because that would be the most fun.
Yes, I love that. You know, I was doing a podcast interview a few weeks ago and someone surprised me and she brought her 10-year-old son to interview me. And he was like, you know, there's a lot of meditation offerings for children out there. What makes Ziva unique? What makes Ziva special? And I was
Oh my God, that's amazing. No, I mean, you know, at 10 years old, they have no problem asking questions most adults would sidestep. I love it. Yeah. That's so funny.
Yeah, and just the answer is, I think this, the practice that's inside of it is so powerful. It's way more powerful than anything you could find on an app. And I've tried to make it as entertaining as possible. I took my Broadway background, Z Bunny's hilarity, these writers from Sesame Street, and really made it like an episode of TV, but with these beautiful, sacred, ancient concepts woven in.
Like, what is one of the techniques that you, maybe especially even as a teacher, when you were doing this for kids, you adapted or you learned about that you hadn't known about before?
Well, I think the one that I've actually started incorporating into my own practice that I wasn't before is shaking. So for the little kids, before they sit, they shake it out. And it's like, shake, shake, shake it out, baby. Shake, shake. And they're shaking out the stormies. And we move through all the different parts of their body. And, you know, we set that up of like, just like a dog, when they hit their head and they shake it off. Or if an animal goes into fight or flight, they shake it off to reset their nervous systems. And you'll see with dogs, it's like they're instantly present. You're like, God, my dog is so happy. And it's like, oh, well, similarly, we can shake that stress out of our nervous systems. And it actually resets our nerves. It can release trauma and stress from our cells.
And it's a
great preparation for meditation. So, you know, I'm going through a pretty intense life transition right now. And sometimes I'll get real, like, you know, I'll feel myself like just cortisol, like coursing through my veins. And thankfully I have the awareness now to be like, I don't want to stew in this. And so I will just literally shake it off before I meditate.
I love it. For anybody who's listening right now and has ever watched Sophie's yoga classes, she does like a whole shaking practice in the beginning for the exact same reason you just mentioned, kind of resetting nerves. And it's literally just your legs, your arms, your torso, just shake as much of it as you can.
Well, yeah, it'll be interesting to see if your kids, if it's too basic for them, you know, if they've grown up around this stuff their whole lives, like it might be like, oh, maybe it's too rudimentary. But, you know, just like with ballet or sports, it's like when you go back to the foundation of it, sure, it only makes you stronger. And yes, meditation is simple, but that doesn't mean it's easy, right? It's like the profundity, right, comes from the simplicity.
Sure. Running is simple. But
that's right.
Running is the simplest thing. Try to go run a marathon. You're totally right. But here's the difference, right? Is anything else that they learn? Sophie's amazing, actually, at making it fun for them. But it's when she thinks of introducing it to them. What I love about this concept is this is for the kids. Yeah. And that's a beautiful, yeah, beautiful thing.
So I wanted to, you know, just take the pressure off of parents. So, you know, like I said, like I don't want them to have to be like the salesperson or the police. It's like, yeah, just let them come to it. And that that's only awesome. Happens if it's accessible and attractive.
I love it. I'm really, really excited about trying this out. So I'm going to keep you to it. We're going to send an email after this to do the beta in-house. And then I will leave a review probably with Sophie and the kids right before this and tell everybody what the experience was like. It is so powerful every time I talk to somebody who starts with children, because I deal with everything that happens. And Sophie and I, when we help couples, we deal with everything that happens on the other side, because some of this stuff wasn't completed or kids were not loved, evaluated, and appreciated for their uniqueness, but instead were set aside for it, or were put down for it, or were shamed for it. So this idea of celebrating all the different parts of you, all the different feelings you have in children, is really, really beautiful.
Thank you for saying that. And thank you for doing the work that you're doing, because whether you've had capital T trauma or small T trauma, like it's part of being a human. We're all going to, yeah, have to deal with it. But I do think that it's easier to equip our children than it is to have to heal adults who've gone through a lot of it. So thank you for so doing much. That work that you're doing. And let's go from all directions.
100%. 100%. Thank you so much, Emily. Thanks for Ziva, and thanks for Ziva Kids. And cannot wait to hear where you guys take this and how incredibly well it goes. Released in a few days. Congratulations.
Thanks.
All right, everybody. Especially with today's episode, because we talked about kids, because we talked about parenting and mindfulness, do what I always ask you to do. Screenshot right now, tag Ziva, tag us. Is it at Ziva Meditation?
Yeah, on Instagram, we're at Ziva Meditation. And the website's just zivameditation.com, where you can find the kids course and the adults course there.
Beautiful. So tag us, tag Ignited, tag me. And let us know what resonated. Like, what lesson are you going to take from today's episode? And either send it and share it with somebody else, share it with your kids, or use it yourself. I'd love to hear. Always love the lessons from these things. Thank you so much, Emily. Have a beautiful rest of your day, and congratulations and good luck in a few days.
Thank you.
Bye. Thank you for tuning in to the Ignited Heroes Recovery Podcast. I really hope you found the information here useful and that we'll see you back here next week. And look, I want to make sure that this podcast is the most useful it can be for you, so please let me know by emailing info@ignited.com if there are any specific topics or questions you'd like to have addressed. As usual, if you like this episode, I would love for you to leave us a 5-star review and rating. Thanks, and see you next week.